Hello, you Awakening Wonders. They're on Spotify, Apple, Stink Whistle, Gurgle Dot, or wherever you download your podcast these days to remain at least peripherally connected to some tendril of truth in a bewildering miasma of lies and propaganda. We appreciate you and we love you. You're part of our community. So that's why we're very happy to give you an audio version of our live Rumble show 5 days a week. It's on Monday to Friday. We decipher the latest news stories. We break down current topics that the mainstream media should be covering. And if they aren't, then we critique why they're not and what they are covering. Every week as well, right? We do brilliant conversations with people like Jordan Peterson, RFK, Tucker, Carlson, Sam Harris, Vandana Shiva, Gabor Mate. These things are already up and you can listen to them now. So remember, this is an audio version of our daily live show. To tune in live, go to rumble.com/Russell Brand. You'll find it easily and I hope that you will love it. Now please enjoy this episode of Stay Free with Russell Brand. Thanks.
No, here's the fucking news.
Hello there, you Awakening Wonders. Thanks for joining me today for Stay Free with Russell Brand. If you've been looking at our social media posts over the course of the day, you'll know that we've got some interesting subjects to discuss. One, what is a war criminal? Who decides which war criminals ought to be tried? Who determines who's allowed to be killed? Who makes those choices? What is a war crime? Eerily redolent of Matt Walsh's documentary in terms of time. What is a war criminal? Can someone tell me what is a war criminal? Who we bloody well say is a war criminal? That's who a bloody war criminal is, let me tell you. We were astonished to see how many of you thought that the subject we should cover as a priority was agriculture and farming. In a way, though, we could have preempted it with a little analysis because it's obvious, isn't it? Because farming is freedom. Farming is food. And across the world, from Sri Lanka to the Netherlands, to our country, the UK, to your country, the United States of America, I'm assuming crazy stuff's going on in Canada and Australia, farmers are feeling the globalist squeeze. Let me know if you are a farmer. We are in the midst of a rural area ourselves, and we know that people that produce food are under pressure. Edicts that are determined by globalist entities and bureaucracies are imposed, it sometimes seems, with the express intention of taking farmers' power away at the knees. So we're discussing that. What's happening in global farming? That's what's happening. And also, we're talking about TikTok as well. The TikTok ban hypocrisy, as we termed it in our poll earlier. And this is fascinating because obviously you'll be aware by now that the Biden administration has just banned TikTok. But do you know that they are continuing to collaborate with and liaise with TikTok influencers, inviting them to swanky White House occasions? And do you know that they're continuing, obviously, I suppose you do know, to accept Meta's lobbying money? So I suppose what we'll be looking at is the TikTok ban. Is it about protecting you? Because remember, when you watch anything about this, you'll say, what you'll hear is, we have to protect you from TikTok. The Chinese Communist Party are in charge of it and they're going to propagandize you to within an inch of your life. I mean, just look at how casually, easily and regularly Nancy Pelosi, like, she uses Russiagate and the idea of Russian interventionism and Putin as a sort of an incessant threat. Russia and Putin are the Kaiser Soze and Nancy Pelosi's mind. Like, they're the boogeyman, is what I'm saying. You'll be watching this now in a variety of places. I beckon you, I urge you to join us in the sweet stream of freedom that I call Rumble. That's our home, and there's a reason for that. Rumble prioritise free speech above all else. Today I'm trying out an in-ear so I can talk to the people in the gallery. We're doing the show a little bit differently and I'm just trying to sort of ease the tension of this object. Yeah, because I can sort of feel it pulling me. I like the haircut, Russell, says Paco Pete, PNW. So we're going to be, over the course of the show, talking about the subjects that I've just listed. And if you're watching us on YouTube, come join us on Rumble. I can't tell you how impressed I've been with Rumble's stance on a variety of free speech issues across the world. And the fact that it is across the world tells you that, as with farming, censorship is a global issue. In New Zealand, they're changing the law. In Australia, they're changing the law. And it's the free speech sites like ours, like Rumble, and like X that are feeling the pinch. Why? Because Meta and Alphabet are, you know, essentially part of the problem. I mean, let's have it right. Let me know in the chat right now. Do you reckon TikTok's going to end up getting owned by Meta? Let me know. Tell me. Okay, and consider becoming an Awakened Wonder if you want to support our work. We do additional videos every single week. We do live interviews. In fact, have a look at the menu of stuff that we do. You could have joined us just now for a conversation with Nick Hudson. He's a mind-blowing entity, Nick Hudson. You'll love that guy. We have a book club. We meditate every week. We're a real little community. We're an adorable little bunch, really. So consider that if you want to. But here we are right now. So let's get into the fun that we've promised you. Okay, so let's have a look at AstraZeneca, what are they up to now? Science shows how a surge of anger could raise heart attack risk. Well, I'm pretty angry about AstraZeneca. So do you notice how many stories are seeded to provide alternative arguments to what seems to be the plain and obvious truth? Do you notice that? Like how the legacy media rally round to prevent the truth from emerging. We're not covering this in any real depth, but of course Donald Trump's still in court and apparently he's having a little rest during. I mean, what? The guy, you've got to say that he's a person who finds it easy to relax anyway.
Really quickly, if I can, Lisa, your observations on Donald Trump today.
Sleeping. More than not, when...
That's not an observation. What's your observation and analysis on Donald Trump? Sleeping. Sleeping. It's like a children's book news. Hasn't the world gone weird? I mean, look at these two. What is this? A gender reversal, Simon and Garfunkel? What is that necklace? What are they doing now? How can they call that news? It's gone crazy. They've gone crazy.
I looked up to see how Trump was receiving the testimony. Trump was not receiving it.
I looked up. I was looking down. But because I'm a journalist and I have integrity, I move my head all the way up for journalism, for freedom, for free speech. I moved it all the way up.
No, because his eyes were closed.
I wouldn't make a difference. Oh, well, I want to know what Garfunkel was going to say. We'll never know. We'll never, never know. Let's see. This is Nancy Pelosi accusing all and sundry of being Trump apologists. Even the amplifiers of the agenda of the powerful MSNBC, Microsoft Broadcasting Network, all part of, you know, we're going to be talking about farming later. Guess who's buying up farmland? Guess who's buying up media? Guess who's buying up vaccines? Let me know in the chat.
And Joe Biden is doing that, created 9 million jobs in his term in office. Donald Trump has the worst record of job loss of any president. So we just have to make sure people know.
That was a global pandemic.
He had the worst record of any president. We've had other concerns in our country. If you want to be an apologist for Donald Trump, that may be your role, but it ain't mine. And
I don't
he has
think
the worst.
That anybody can accuse
and
me of that.
We,
well, you are an apologist. You're an apologist. You're all apologists. Why can't you hate Trump like I hate Trump? You don't hate him enough. You don't hate him enough. Hey, you guys, come over. Come over. We're having a crazy time already while we still have free speech. Join us for free speech. Click the link. Come on over. This is where she's... what's she doing now? Now she's suggesting that pro-Palestinian protests are... like it's Putin that's organising it. I don't know. Putin, given that every... few minutes they claim he has a new variant of cancer. I don't know, he's organizing all these protests, the poor guy.
You know what the protesters and the hecklers are saying about Joe Biden, the label genocide Joe. Could support for Israel cost Democrats the election this fall?
It's in Putin's interest for what's his name to win. And
she looks nice, though, Nancy Pelosi. Like, you know, let's say some... I'm, like, looking for positive things to say. She looks nice. That's now, look, we can't rule out that Putin is organizing this.
Therefore, I see some encouragement on the part of the Russians of some of what's going on. It's real, but some of it, I think, has a Russian tinge to it.
Let's see what's far right now. Making babies is far right now. It's if far right. It used to be. What did it used to be? Far right. Did far right? It used to sort of like. I thought it used to be like actual Hitler. Or you're like that Hitler. You know, people would go, he was all right. And you would go, oh, hang on. Or maybe, you know, there was haircuts, there was boots. Now, making babies, far right. Far right activists use fitness. Fitness is far right. Far right. Farming. Farming is far right. Growing food. I'm surprised they have time to grow the wheat or to tend to the cattle with all of the constant reading of Mein Kampf and Sieg Heilin. Mostly we get up and we do a bit like Sieg Heilin and that and then like read Mein Kampf for a while. Then, of course, it's on with the Dr. Martin boots and it's a march up and down, rallying, flag waving. Then, of course, you know, red sky at night, fascist delight. See, what else? Cars, alcohol makes you more right-wing now. Milk's racist. Hate, body odor, racism, you're racist. It's an extraordinary inventory now. Do you see that? It feels like we're being encircled on every conceivable side in order to curtail us and contain us in an absolute paddock of racism. Here's an extraordinary story, though, that might be more relevant to you if one of your interests is not dying in the apocalypse. It seems that Lloyd Austin has admitted that American troops will be deployed in Gaza in a very interesting way. You've got to admire their entrepreneurial spirit. He's acknowledged on Tuesday it's a possibility that 1,000 US troops deployed off the coast of Gaza as a part of a project to build a pier. It could come under fire. If they came under fire, they will be able to shoot back. The US is expected to spend at least $320 million on the pier in Gaza. President Biden ordered its construction to allow more aid into the strip instead of pressuring Israel to open more land border crossings. It's a curious relationship currently, isn't it, between the United States and that region. On one hand, there is the ongoing arming of Israel, which of course facilitates events that I think most people, 70% of voters certainly would prefer that the military activity, should we call it, in Gaza was ended. And $320 million, it's yours as well, that's also yours, is being spent on building a pier. I mean, what, at this point, what is the function of a pier? What, like, who's prioritising this? Who's organising these budgets? Who's saying, like, on one hand, let's continue to rain down evisceration, but also, you know, we all enjoy a pier, don't we? How about a little trip to Coney Island?
Ms. Lotkin just said there'll be about 1,000 U.S. service members operating a pier system off of Gaza. How many of them will have guns, Mr. Secretary?
Well, typically all of the deployed service members carry guns, and they have the ability to protect themselves if challenged.
So if someone from land in Gaza shoots at our service members who are on the $320 million pier that we're building, you're telling me our service members can shoot back?
They have the right to return fire to protect themselves. Now,
well,
now
do we think that's like? So now I want to move to the likelihood that you think someone from land in Gaza might shoot at our service members on this pier. Do you think that's
Matt Gaetz may look like a grown-up monster, but by God, is he a good interrogator? The times I've seen that dude put various folk from Congress and elsewhere within the Biden administration, or indeed his own party, under pressure, suggests this is a dude who knows how to have a conversation. He's got a widow's peak. He's got a brow. He looks like the child of a werewolf and a Frankenstein. Suppose we should call him Frankenstein's monster more literally. But my God, he knows how to interrogate, doesn't he? Because what Matt Gaetz has done there is gotten Lloyd Austin to admit that this project could be, I mean, indeed, do you think that part of the project is to legitimize US troops being deployed in Gaza? Let me know how you feel about this. And do you think that's what Matt Gaetz is suggesting there?
It's a likely scenario?
That's possible, yes.
This is a very telling moment, Mr. Secretary, because you've said something that's quite possible that could happen, right? Shots from Gaza on our service members, and then the response, our armed service members shooting live fire into Gaza. That is a possible outcome here so that we can become the Port Authority and run this pier. Right?
That's correct. You know, I expect that we will always
Don't
have the ability to protect
ourselves. Don't you think
that
counts as boots on the ground? President Biden told the country that we weren't going to have boots on the ground in Gaza.
And we won't.
Okay, but you guys parse the distinction between, like, when Americans think boots on the ground, they think Americans in harm's way or engaged actively in a conflict. You guys seem to be sort of saying that boots on a pier connected to the ground, connected to service members shooting into Gaza.
Now, these boots are not on the ground. These boots are on the pier. These boots were made for walking. These boots were made for enjoying a promenade, a stroll, some cotton candy, a wander on the Gazan beachfront. That don't constitute boots on the ground. They could walk off the end of the pier, that's boots on the water. Maybe this is a messianic event, a miracle. Those boots, as long as they don't touch the ground, the boots were hovering. They were hovering just above the ground. How are the military going to be able to continue to recruit? I've spoken to a lot of American military personnel in recent months. And a lot of vets. Let me know in the chat if you are serving America, if you're in the American military. And, you know, it seems these days that to be a patriot is to be anti-establishment, is to be mistrustful of your government. And let's have a look at this from Candice. Baked into the concept of joining the military is the defense of our homeland first and foremost, not the homeland of foreign countries. Given the state of politics, I can't think of a single reason why any American would sign on to serve. We are clearly no longer sovereign. A basic question about whose interests are being represented now is, do you imagine if there were a referenda, if you were able to vote for it, how many of these conflicts would you continue to fund through your tax dollars? If you were able to choose, would you prefer to see a diplomatic solution between Ukraine and Russia? Would you prefer to see a ceasefire in all Middle Eastern conflicts? Do you want to see an escalation between the US and China? Or would you prefer to invest in American infrastructure, invest in your own country, focus on your own borders, your own nation, your own well-being? Seems to me that those that govern are deeply, deeply out of touch. Now, you're watching us on YouTube. That is, we're going to leave you now. You've got to click the link in the description and join us over on that sweet stream of freedom. We'll be discussing the TikTok ban hypocrisy. Joe Biden continues to court influencers. All the while, TikTok is being banned or at least leveraged into some kind of hostile takeover by a more subservient entity. We're going to be talking about farming. That's what you wanted us to talk about, and how globalism is at war with farming and farmers everywhere. Click the link in the description. Come on over to the sweet stream of freedom and we will talk honestly together. Click that link. Okay, let's have a look. Oh, this is pretty extraordinary. Zelensky has just done a 10...
Bill Gates has been snatched...
No, Bill. That guy. There's... I mean, save it. You wait, Bill. You wait. You talk when I ask you to talk. God, wouldn't it be amazing to have that control over Bill Gates when he's acquiring farmland, when he's investing in vaccines, when he's funding the WHO? Just imagine. Just imagine a world where you could oppose Bill Gates so effortlessly. Now, Vladimir Zelensky has said that he's working on a 10-year aid deal with the United States of America. So people have said that the intention is to turn Ukraine-Russia into a kind of Afghanistan-like rolling conflict that requires continual funding, a long, entrenched, normalized war. The difference, of course, is that Afghanistan were not and are not a nuclear superpower. Let's see, let's have a look. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said that the US and Ukraine are working on a 10-year bilateral security deal that would include long-term commitments for US military aid. The US and other NATO countries agreed to negotiate bilateral deals with Ukraine at the Alliance's summit at the Vilnius, I hope I'm saying that correctly, last year. Ukraine has already signed agreements with several NATO nations, and Zelensky said he was hoping to make the deal with the US the strongest of all. So that's interesting. That's an indication of a long-term plan, isn't it? Like, if you've got a 10-year deal, isn't the suggestion that this is not a conflict that's going to be concluded imminently or immediately through diplomacy? I don't know what you read into that. Another extraordinary economic event is that you are buying 1.6 billion, you're buying with your tax dollars, $1.6 billion worth of Ukrainian arms for Ukraine, from Ukraine. This is regifting on a ridiculous scale. You're taking that missile, you're giving the missile back to them. It's extraordinary. Let's have a look at that story. The US will purchase $1.6 billion in Ukrainian-made weapons for Ukraine, the Defense Post reported on Monday. The $1.6 billion is included in a $6 billion tranche of weapons the US announced on April 26. The arms will be provided through Ukrainian Security Assistance Initiative, which allows the US to purchase weapons from Ukraine. Is it me, or is this sort of getting kind of complicated? You're supplying them with weapons, you're purchasing weapons for them. Seems to me to have become needlessly convoluted. And indeed, what's set up the reset the assets, guys. And what's extraordinarily convoluted and difficult to determine these days is, what is a war criminal? What constitutes a war criminal? Let me unpack that a little. There's been talk that Netanyahu will be pursued and potentially arrested as a war criminal due to his actions, or the legitimization or authorization of actions in Gaza. Putin is regularly adjudged to be a war criminal for the criminal invasion of Ukraine. But the reason that Putin can't be pursued through the international courts for war criminality is because, to draw the comparison, to make that claim, would draw attention to the numerous criminal actions and war crimes of your administration and of my nation. So who's the war criminal, really? Is it Netanyahu? Is it Putin? Is it Tony Blair? Is it Barack Obama? Is it George W. Bush? Is the entire system based on criminality? And who is allowed to kill, and for what means? So, firstly, we've been fed a number of curious narratives throughout the Ukraine-Russia conflicts. You will recall the death of Navalny, the much-fated and adored leader of the opposition against Putin's cancer-ridden tyranny. And we, all of us that peruse the legacy media, will be adjacent to certain that Navalny died as a result of Putin's actions, right? Putin killed Navalny. We all know that. I feel like I like sort of saw an outpouring of grief, like that Navalny, a person I'd never heard of before, was sort of sold to me as some kind of Forrest Gump individual, that Navalny's dead. It's a dark day for all of us. And you know who killed him? That bastard, Tucker Carlson's on-screen accomplice, Vladimir Putin himself. Well, it turns out Navalny, well, if he was killed by Putin, there's certainly no evidence of it. Let's have a look. The Wall Street Journal reported on Saturday that US intelligence agencies believe Russian President Vladimir Putin likely did not order the killing of opposition figure Alexei Navalny, who died earlier this year while serving a 19-year sentence at a penal colony in Siberia. The Journal report said the idea that Putin likely didn't order Navalny's death is broadly accepted within the intelligence community, and is the view of the CIA, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, and the State Department's Intelligence Wing. So according to their own deep state, Putin did not kill Navalny. There's no evidence for it. It was a bogus claim. It belongs with the Nord Stream pipeline in the bogus fables that have emerged throughout this war to legitimize its perpetuation and the ongoing vilification of Russia. Of course, we're aware that Russia has its own propaganda. It has its own means of carrying out deep state activity and skullduggery. But when it comes to the death of Navalny, Alexei Navalny, what we have to concede is this is a matter of framing, that the legacy media and establishment interests have been framing Vladimir Putin as a war criminal from the outset of this conflict, even prior to it. So will Benjamin Netanyahu be arrested as a war criminal? What constitutes a war crime? And if we accept that Putin is a war criminal, that Netanyahu is a war criminal, many of our fated heroes, the members of the pantheon of great American presidents, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and hey, our hands are hardly clean here in the United Kingdom, Tony Blair too, would have to be regarded as a war criminal by the systems of evaluation that would likely be deployed to condemn either of those two. Let's have a little look at that. Here's Glenn Greenwald posting on this. this subject earlier. The Wall Street Journal reports that Navalny was not murdered by Putin, and I responded to that, you can see. Here's a video of Vedant Patel, principal deputy spokesperson for the U.S. Department of State, on the matter.
But at the crux of this for the United States is that we do not believe that the ICC has jurisdiction on this. That being said, we work closely with the ICC in a number of key areas. We think that they do important work as it relates to Ukraine, Darfur, Sudan. But again, on this particular instance, they just do not have jurisdiction.
Okay, so it's not just a bureaucratic response. It appears that US interests are actively working to prevent an arrest taking place. And that is, of course, likely because they would be judged to be accomplices in such criminality, as well as the historic crimes. Indeed, empire itself necessitates criminality and war criminality in particular. Increasingly on this show, we've come to recognize that war is the business of the establishment. So let's have a look at war criminality and what constitutes a war crime in a little more detail. The US and Israel are working together to prevent the International Criminal Court from issuing an arrest for an arrest warrant for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Haaretz reported that the Israeli government is working under the assumption that arrest warrants could be issued as soon as this week. The report said the US is already engaged in an effort to block the warrants. Any criminal investigation into Netanyahu also implicates Biden, since he's provided so much support for Israel's for the Israeli campaign in Gaza. The US, Israel's leading arms supplier, has opposed the ICC's Palestine investigation from the start, with Secretary of State Antony Blinken saying in a 2021 statement that the court has no jurisdiction over this matter because Israel is not a party to the ICC. So it's a matter of jurisdiction rather than a matter of ethics, morality, or criminality. What Blinken is saying there is, well, the ICC, who are the ICC to tell us what's a war crime? Shut your mouths, for God's sake. Let's have a look. The Biden administration vocally supported the ICC's decision to issue an arrest warrant for Putin over war crimes committed in Ukraine, even though neither Russia nor Ukraine are parties to the Rome Statute. So they were willing to legitimize the ICC's arrest warrant when it came to Putin. So who is a war criminal? Well, whoever the establishment says is a war criminal. What is a pandemic? Whatever the WHO says is a pandemic. Do you see that language is using its meaning? That principles are using their meaning? That we're being invited to participate in a kind of odd ontological wilderness where people can determine whose war crimes are legitimate and whose war crimes are not even war crimes at all, or at least don't fall within the jurisdiction of the people or bodies that might determine what a war crime is. What is a war crime? 20 years after the United States invaded Iraq and an act of aggression that paved the way for war crimes, their Pentagon officials have sought to block the Biden administration's efforts to aid the International Criminal Court's investigation of war crimes committed by Russia during its year-long invasion of Ukraine, while much of the Biden administration, including the State and Justice Departments and some intelligence agencies, support turning US gathered evidence of Russian crimes over to the ICC. Defense officials have so far sought to stop those efforts because if you start saying, hey, this is a war crime, what is? Well, invading Ukraine for no reason, getting involved in their country. Like, well, the next question might be, what the hell were you doing in Iraq? Those officials oppose US involvement in the ICC's investigation because they fear it would set a precedent that could one day lead to the prosecution of Americans for past or future crimes, a concern long voiced by multiple US administrations, including the current one. When the US invaded Iraq in March 2003, it did so neither in self-defense nor with the authorization of the UN Security Council. So there are predeterminates and conditions that decide whether or not something's a war crime, making the war illegal under international standards. Documented and alleged war crimes committed by Russian forces and contractors in Ukraine include, but are not limited to, massacres and other murders of civilians and soldiers, indiscriminate attacks on densely populated areas, attacking critical civilian infrastructure, bombing hospitals, shelters, torture, rape and sexual enslavement of women and children, and stealing children. Many stories of that nature were revealed extraordinarily by the publications of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, that espionaging acting criminal still jailed for, you know, telling us about other people's criminality. American troops and contractors have perpetrated each of those war crimes in US attacks, invasions, occupations, and peacekeeping operations in the years since the ICC was established. Clinton, Obama, and Biden are identified with the development of the war policy of American imperialism over the past three decades. Clinton, during his presidency, oversaw a series of US military interventions in the former Yugoslavia, including full-scale air war against Serbia and Somalia, as well as bomb and missile attacks in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Sudan. Obama continued the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, begun by George W. Bush, while bombing Libya, supporting Islamic forces in that country and in Syria, plunging both countries into bloody civil wars. He extended the global pursuit of military confrontation with his turn to Asia, promising to shift the majority of US military forces to the Asia-Pacific theater to confront China. Biden's main focus since taking office has been to instigate, then escalate the US-NATO proxy war against Russia in Ukraine, to which the administration has devoted massive financial and military resources. So, when you look at the subject of war criminality, what you are essentially looking at is who decides what a war criminal is. Is Benjamin Netanyahu a war criminal because of actions in Gaza, which many people believe to be genocidal? Is Barack Obama a war criminal because of his perpetuation of war crimes throughout his administration? Is Bill Clinton a war criminal? Is the entire system predicated on war criminality? Are all of us totally and entirely disenfranchised from the systems and actions that we fund through our taxes? Are all of us essentially participating in a state of criminality, not through any choice, but by default? So it seems that you can't even engage the principles of justice, because to do so would be to acknowledge that the system itself is criminal. But that's just what I think. Why don't you let me know what you think in the comments and the chat? And if you can sleep easy in your bed after a story like that, then, well, I mean, maybe you don't need this fantastic product. Have a look. We're very happy to bring you our We're very happy to bring you our content in conjunction with our wonderful commercial partners. We make good stories out of bad news, but it's difficult not to let all these headlines swirl around your ever-awakening mind at bedtime. Millions of us face sleeplessness. It's an epidemic. It's silently harming our health and well-being. TWC Restful Sleep Formula, crafted by awake doctors, although they can sleep when they need to, like Dr. Peter McCulloch and his chief medical board at The Wellness Company, is the product we want to talk to you about right now. An all-natural alternative to melatonin. Did you not know that melatonin disrupts your hormones? This is packed with ashwagandha, delicious, kava, chamomile, and my favorite, passion flower. This powerful capsule has everything you need for deep, rejuvenating sleep. Purchasing supplements separately costs like $120. It's ridiculous. But Restful Sleep Formula offers a 56% saving. Don't just dream of better sleep. Make it a reality. Achieve your deepest, most restful sleep naturally. Visit twc.health/brand. Use the code brand. Get your $30 off at checkout. Plus, they all know our adverts work. Everyone's a winner. Let's get back to the content. Sleep well tonight. We have to protect you. We have to protect you from dissidents. We have to protect you from the free speech of others. And that's why a ban on TikTok is even now passing its way through the various systems of American government. And yet TikTok remains a vital tool in Joe Biden's propaganda arsenal. So while TikTok is being banned, unless TikTok is acquired by Meta or some other comparable entity that would obviously cudgel TikTok into the type of compliance that's required, then why is it that simultaneously Joe Biden is still, it seems one way or another, funding TikTok influencers as part of his re-election campaign? Let's have a look.
21-year-old Harry Sisson had a special view of President Biden on the night of the State of the Union address, up close and personal from the White House.
President Biden needs four more years in that house. You
know, and his videos capturing behind-the-scenes moments were broadcast to more than 830,000 followers. Harry is just one of dozens of social media personalities and influencers that the Biden administration, and more importantly, the Biden campaign, is courting. From special invites to White House briefings to State of the Union watch parties, all to get out their message and the vote on platforms like TikTok and Instagram.
Folks I know in my circle or even just friends, a lot of people are persuaded daily by stuff on TikTok. They'll see a clip of Biden or Trump saying something, and that'll change their minds.
The Biden campaign told NewsHour that they aren't currently paying influencers for their content. Recent polling shows Biden is struggling with young voters, a key part of the Democratic base. His approval with voters under 30 sitting at 30%. Now, they're trying to meet young voters where they are, on the grid.
But you know who's having a bad day? Mike Johnson and his House Republican caucus. I'll tell you why.
They're hoping that by partnering with beloved online personalities, the algorithm might work in their favor.
Mr. Speaker, I thank
Despite the ongoing scrutiny around TikTok, the Biden campaign is cranking out viral content.
Trump or Biden?
Are you kidding? Biden.
Since their TikTok launch on Super Bowl Sunday, the campaign has been leaning in.
Look over here.
Capitalizing on pop culture moments and filming with regular people are all part of the strategy. Unvarnished, relatable, and genuine.
The president came to my house to have dinner.
Former President Obama revolutionized how once nascent social media platforms could turn out the vote. Now there are communications agencies dedicated to partnering campaigns and politicians with influencers as an integral part of their digital strategy. Only the November result will reveal whether the investment in influencers translates to votes.
This is a brilliant story because it's another opportunity for us to examine the cartilage that now exists between the state and the media, how it's possible to crush dissent and amplify powerful messaging. Like you, I was really struck by those young TikTok influencers kind of innocently conveying propaganda enthusiastically. Mike Gates is doing this. Joe Biden's fantastic. He came around my house for dinner. He's just a regular guy. Corn Pop was a son of a bitch. There's no question about it. So what we are finding now is that the Biden administration is in a peculiar situation of requiring the TikTok ban to be enacted, but knowing that between now and the election, they're going to have to utilize TikTok. Make no mistake about it. These kind of online independent media spaces are the difference between, I believe, along with primarily your spirit, your resolve, and your willingness to oppose, the difference between an unignorable, unavoidable, inexorable tyranny and the potential for freedom. They recognize that these spaces and these kind of conversations are leading to genuine opposition and genuine disruption. Let's just take the example of the WHO treaty. The current WHO treaty is having to be continually amended so that it can be effective and passed, even though many of us now know that the whole thing is a coup. And the WHO treaty is designed in particular and specifically to address the problems that they recognized during the pandemic. Oh no! During the pandemic, Joe Rogan was a bloody pain in the ass. He was able to bring on Robert Malone and a variety of people and dissidents and talk about health and wellness and other fascist right-wing stuff. We have to make sure that the next incarnation of the WHO treaty ensures that we will have the power to censor and control, impose global measures, and vaguely describe what type of emergency we will be able to utilize to shut down people's freedoms. TikTok is one of those spaces where reporting on a variety of subjects, war, pandemics, climate change, farmers' protests, is not controlled in the manner that the state requires. Let's have a look at this in a little more detail and look at the hypocrisy and paradox around TikTok regulation and legislation. As Congress and the National Security State continue their quest to ban the TikTok social media platform, President Joe Biden has been courting TikTok influencers to help him shore up youth support for his re-election. Youth support that you might imagine is in decline because a lot of people are not down with Genocide Joe's ongoing wars. While the administration has been publicly casting TikTok as a grave threat to American security, the White House has quietly hosted a number of influencers to pitch them on pro-Biden content. In recent months, some of the biggest TikTok users with accounts boasting millions of followers have visited the White House, visitor logs reveal. So it's not like TikTok is bad, it's that some TikTok is bad. The TikTok that we're not in control of is bad. Like free speech. Not all free speech is bad. Free speech that opposes our agenda is bad. Each of these TikToker meetings was coordinated by White House Deputy Director of Partnerships, Morgan McNaughton, who herself has a background with the company. She was hired last year from Pallet, a social media talent management company that specializes in TikTok personalities. So Pallet has become one of those pieces of cartilage that is utilized to convey propaganda. While there, McNaughton helped found the political group TikTok for Biden. That name's a bit shit. Why don't we call it Gen Z for Change? That's what they've renamed it. Many of the TikTok users who visited the White House are themselves represented by Pallet. But you can't use taxpayer money to fund TikTok influencers, can you? Well, not if you do it overtly. Pallet received $200,000 in 2022 from the DNC for paid media. Federal Election Commission data reveals this. According to the Washington Post's Taylor Lorenz, Pallet was paid a retainer from the DNC to cover expenses for 8 TikTok creators to travel to Washington in hopes of wooing them in the run-up to the midterm elections, resulting in an Oval Office meeting with Biden. So what they've acknowledged is that TikTok is effective in reaching certain demographics, presumably by their reckoning, young people. So they're trying to populate TikTok with influencers that are sympathetic and indeed paid to be sympathetic to their perspective while simultaneously banning TikTok. That's kind of crazy. That's a little bit like paying to build a pier in Gaza while facilitating the bombing of Gaza. What kind of topsy-turvy, amoral, crazy, godless world are they trying to midwife us into? Though the Biden administration has directly consulted on the creation of the legislation that could ban TikTok, the Biden campaign has embraced the app, creating an official account. Nearly half of the US population uses TikTok. Uh-oh, it's the most downloaded app in the country and the world. Lawmakers are citing data privacy, which we know they care a great deal about, national security, which of course is an extraordinary priority for them, as primary concerns behind the ban. But others have been more explicit. They are worried about how the app is influencing Americans' political views, particularly among young voters. Discussion of the TikTok ban in Congress has been rife with red baiting and anti-Chinese fear-mongering. Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, Democrat, referred to TikTok as a communist propaganda tool. And Senator Pete Ricketts said, pro-Palestinian and pro-Hamas hashtags are generating 50 times the views on TikTok right now. These videos have more reach than the top 10 US news websites combined. This is not a coincidence. Then he goes on to say, extraordinarily, the Chinese Communist Party is doing this on purpose. But this is the problem that they face in general with social media and independent media's use of social media sites. It's impossible now to prevent alternative narratives, opposition narratives, dissident narratives, inquiring, questioning narratives, new alliances emerging. So what's required is a topsy-turvy, bizarre set of legislature and incentives that are directly at odds with each other. We need a bunch of TikTok influencers, fresh-faced Gen Z for Biden. We need these kids. Meanwhile, can you get rid of TikTok? It's killing people. The truth behind it, of course, is that they're acknowledging now that we don't need the legacy media, that we've realized that the legacy media is unreliable, untrustworthy, a tool of the establishment. If that wasn't evident to you in that bizarre gala the other day, where there was back slapping and fist pumping and celebration of freedom while Julian Assange remains in prison, while Gonzalo Lira died in prison, while it's plain and obvious that the legacy media functions primarily as a tool of the state and of globalist corporatist interest. Just think for a moment how they behaved in the pandemic. They're out of control. And we've realized it. We've awakened from the illusion. The scales have fallen. The web they've spun before us has been broken. And now they're panicking. Indeed, these are the end times. There's no concrete evidence supporting the idea that political ideas shared on TikTok are more progressive or more pro-Palestinian than what you find on other platforms, or that it skews more progressive than the overall population, with nearly 70% of voters now supporting a ceasefire in Gaza. When 70% of people just don't want war anymore, it's very difficult to prevent that kind of truth reaching the mainstream. The truth is, the jig is up. The truth is, people have had enough. The truth is, people are ready now for change. The US government's desire to ban TikTok instead of taking industry-wide action is a good indication that its campaign isn't really about national security or data protection, Paris Marx points out, but something much deeper, namely the preservation of American economic and geopolitical hegemony. Oh, that's what it is. They are banning TikTok because they need to control the narrative. They need to control your consciousness, your mind, your freedom, your ability to make choices is a problem for them. You are their enemy. You are a terrorist now. That's why the meaning of language is being inverted. That's why suddenly everything from drinking milk to farming to doing push-ups is considered right wing, because you are being criminalized. I am being criminalized. Dissent, opposition are all being criminalized. But is there anyone that benefits from the TikTok ban? Let's think real hard now. Meta Platforms and its subsidiaries spent a record high $7.6 million on lobbying the federal government in the first quarter of the year as the US Congress advanced legislation that could ban Instagram's chief competitor, TikTok. Wow, I wonder who will end up benefiting from TikTok's forced sale or foreclosure. Could it be social media sites that are compliant? Social media sites that were willing to let the FBI and the CIA infiltrate, as they plainly have been within legacy media for many years? You know about Operation Mockingbird. Do you want us to do an exclusive video on Operation Mockingbird? We'll do it, baby. We're crazy enough to do it. So you're funding this chaos. You're funding these unpopular wars. You're funding them buying the influence of TikTok influencers from Gen Z, all the while banning TikTok, precisely because your freedom is their problem, precisely because your awakening is something they have to oppose. For me, this is borderline satanic, Luciferian madness. We have to have an awakening. We have to remain discerning. We have to be able to communicate freely wherever that is possible. So look at what platforms you're using to watch our content. But that's just what I think. Why don't you let me know what you think in the chat, you beautiful individuals. Now we're moving on to the topic that you most wanted us to communicate with you about. Farming. Now, farming is a pretty important subject if you, I don't know, eat food. Do you eat food? Are you a human? Do you require calories? Do you need to swallow nutrients in order to not die? Yes. Well, then surely you want all of your food sources controlled by centralist, narcissist, psychopath lunatics who are telling you that they're helping you while acquiring vast tracts of farmland, while shutting down your ability to eat fresh food, while telling you that their every action is conducted in the sweet and holy name of preventing climate change, while flying avocados hither and yon, while growing laboratory meat and telling us to eat bugs, and needlessly attacking and destroying the livelihood and lives of farmers. Do you know how many Indian farmers took their own lives in the last 10 years? They were the early adapters. They were the harbingers. They were the canary in the cage. They were the first victims of globalism and a globalist plot to control food that is now beginning to affect American farmers, Dutch farmers, German farmers, British farmers, farmers everywhere. Do you not ever get curious? Why are farmers all over the world pissed off and blocking roads and setting stuff on fire? Why could that be? Well, it's obvious, isn't it? They've all gone right wing. They've all gone right wing from all of their right wing activity. Ah, you know, I've been running this farm for a while. My father, he brought me up on farming, using mostly the fascism of Mussolini. We sprinkle a little bit of Mussolini over the crops, and then we're over there, and it's a little bit of Goebbels over there onto the maize. It makes it grow up beautifully. So what the hell is going on in farming? In our country, Jeremy Clarkson, who's a very important, significant media figure, has a show called Clarkson's Farm. But even this mainstream product, proliferated by Amazon, the brand that perhaps above all others represents globalist consumerism, even his show, which is made by Amazon, has become a kind of anti-globalist commodity, because he's talking about how his farming practices are restricted by ridiculous regulation and legislation. And if you're a farmer, you know already the moves they're making. They're making your fuel impossible to purchase. They're making your fertilizer illegal somehow. They're making your price structure not make sense. They are endlessly facilitating giant globalist corporations like Walmart or whatever supermarkets prevalent in your country have too much purchase power. And all the while, no one is telling us that it just makes common sense that all of us should be eating food that's grown or reared in the area that we're living in, that we should have as much control as possible over our food, as much awareness as possible of what's going into our mouths, as much control over seeds or livestock or whatever you want to call it as possible. And yet the trend is in the opposite direction. Let's get into it. As usual, one man stands as a colossus across the world. It's the universe's favorite nerd. It's the real-life Dr. Evil himself. It's the living paperclip. It's Bill Gates, and he's buying your farm.
Bill Gates has been snatching up 242,000 acres of farmland across the U.S., enough to make him the top private farmland owner in America. According to the Land Report, the tech billionaire has been purchasing agricultural land for years, building a massive portfolio of farmland in 18 states. His largest holdings are more than 69,000 acres in Louisiana, almost 48,000 acres in Arkansas, and about 20,500 acres in Nebraska. Additionally, he has a stake in 25,750 acres of traditional land in Phoenix, Arizona, which is being developed as a new suburb. It's not clear how Gates' farmland is being used.
Why don't you just trust Bill? What have you got against Bill? He's trying to help you. He's tried to help you through the pandemic. He's trying to help you now. He's trying to help the people of various African nations. He's trying to help the people of India. He's just trying his best to help you. Why don't you want Bill Gates' help? I'm sure he's got a perfectly legitimate reason for acquiring all of this food and farmland. And I'm sure it has nothing to do with the centralization of resources to facilitate, in an instant, starvation where populations that become non-compliant. Because occasionally, don't you get a glimpse of a second kingdom, the real kingdom, the fact that like the lilies of the field or the birds, you could become free, that you are taken care of, that if you are able to peel away the layers of corruption and control, you might be able to participate in entirely different systems, and then quick enough, the record scratches and their authority is reimposed. I wonder if there's any connection between this acquisition of farmland, measures that seem designed to control and shut down farmers, and bioengineered food appearing in our supermarkets without so much as a murmur.
They say Aldi Fresh, but their salads contain bioengineered food ingredients. Their bagels contain bioengineered food ingredients. Not so fresh. No artificial flavors, but it contains bioengineered food ingredients.
Once they start sticking the insects down our throats, we'll be very grateful for the glory days of simple bioengineered natural treats. Oh, I remember when we didn't have to crunch our way for a big fistful of locusts as a lunchtime snack. Yeah, in my day, we had bioengineered food. But then, because of our bloody fascist farmers, the mad right-wing lunatics saluting Pol Pot and whatnot, now we've got to eat these bugs.
Even the granola bars or fruit bars contains bioengineered food ingredients.
What's go- going on with our farms and our farmers? What is being imposed? And how come a figure like Jeremy Clarkson, who's a very popular and successful broadcaster in our country, is pointing out that there are nonsense laws across the UK? We already know that everywhere, whether it's as a result of EU or UN edicts or various other legislative or bureaucratic bodies across India, Sri Lanka, elsewhere, who knows where these ideas are coming from, but I figure there's something to do with these crazy acreage acquiring lunatics that are always trying to help us. Why is it that the fuel for farmers is becoming expensive? Why is it that fertilizers are getting banned? Why is it we're being continually told that cows are Nazis now? What on earth is going on? And why is it that Jeremy Clarkson, who appeared to start a farm as, you know, little more than part of a TV show, is now pointing out that due to bureaucracy and peculiar regulation, it's cheaper to stop growing food? And wait, for there's a moment in this is extraordinary, a piece in this article, where a British agricultural official says, "We do acknowledge that the main point of farming is to produce food." That's the only point in farming. Well, no. The main point of farming is, of course, fascism. But after that, it's food. Jeremy Clarkson said he has stopped growing food in some of his fields because it is more profitable to take government eco handouts. Since Brexit, farmers no longer receive subsidies for producing food, yet they can still get payments for environmental schemes under the Sustainable Farming Incentive. Clarkson, who has owned his diddly squat farm in Chipping Norton for 11 years. That's not far from here, actually. We should go. And like, he's, you know, he's calling it diddly squat because he's that, you know, he's that kind of guy. Warned British farmers were being incentivized not to produce food. Isn't that weird? Is this part of some dreadful global scheme? Why would you incentivize farmers to not grow food? What's the point of farming? This has led to more imported food. That's weird, isn't it? It's weird that importing food is somehow better, more successful, more ecologically viable than eating food grown near your face and mouth. Writing in the Sunday Times magazine, he said, "I've signed up to the government's eco-friendly grant scheme and will be planting things that aren't food in three fields. They're good for the soil and they're good for my bank balance, but it means I'll be growing stuff that people can't eat. I know one chap who has taken 60% of his farm out of food production, and he's not alone. So yippee, all that stored carbon and all of that fixed in nitrogen. But what if you want some bread? You'll have to get a loaf made from wheat that was grown abroad and potentially that was genetically engineered." Do you feel that this is about control? Do you feel that there's an attempt to control food? That, in a sense, this legislation is being brought about precisely because it will destabilize, debilitate, impoverish, and make farming impossible? Let me know if you are a farmer. Let us know what you are experiencing. Let us know if you're participating in these protests. Let us know why you think the legacy media aren't covering these protests correctly. And how's that good for global warming? He continues. Under the SFI, farmers can receive money for turning their arable and horticultural fields into bee-friendly wildflower meadows, grassland, or planting species that can feed winter birds. Now, look, I'm a bit of a hippie and all those things sound pretty fantastic, but I believe that what you should have is localized power for farmers and incentives to ensure that the produce they generate is, broadly speaking, traded and contained as locally as possible. An entirely different decentralized model where the community and the farmers interact together. Farming Minister Mark Spencer, whose name is much too much like Marks and Spencer's, which is a type of shop we have here in the UK, said, "Food production is the primary purpose of farming, and we are taking..." Food production is the primary purpose of farming. That's like saying ejaculation is the primary purpose of masturbation. What other reason is there for it? "Well, part of this will warm me up. I'll be nice and warm, and as a side effect, there will be some..." Food production is the sole purpose of farming. and we are taking action to clarify this principle. That's when you know bureaucracy's got out of control. That's when you know that minds that are not connected to truth, reason, the land, and the people have taken control of our hearts and minds. When a farming minister has to come out and say, food production is the primary purpose of farming, one of many. There's loads of reasons for farming, really. I farm really as sort of just is a hobby. I farm really to keep myself warm. I farm really just to get my toes in the soil. There's no other reason to farm. We'll be taking action to clarify this principle. You don't need to clarify a principle of pragmatism. You don't need to clarify the idea that food is for eating. You don't need to clarify the idea that this is plainly about control and centralizing food and the ability to distribute food and impecuniating farmers so they don't have no power, the same way that industry has been crippled in the previous century, so that every facet of working life, the working people that you have to represent but absolutely loathe, whose taxes you use to destroy them, the legacy media that you use to continually vilify them, whose movements you undermine, whose leaders you attack, whose movements you continually undermine, whose causes you claim are far right. All of these principles require clarification, but you ain't gonna get it from a corrupt government minister. The government has received more than 15,000 applications and used over 14,000 agreement offers and said the vast majority of land in the scheme continues to produce food in a more sustainable, resilient way that's good for food production and the environment. In an interview with The Telegraph this week, Caleb Cooper, Clarkson's farm manager, and if you watch Clarkson's show, like, Caleb's like a comedy character. Like, I'm guessing, obviously, he's a legit farmer as well. But, like, this guy's like a normal guy. And check out what he's saying. He's pointing out the absolute fact of the matter. Now, you know, if you watch the show, and I've not watched it yet, but I will watch it, actually, because it seems like it's pretty much on the nose when it comes to some of the issues we're facing around food production and, therefore, freedom. This is what he said. He warned that there was too much reliance on cheap imports and not enough support for growers. How does that feel if you're a farmer, if you're involved in agriculture? Does that sound true? He argued that if Britain continues to fail to produce sufficient food, it could lead to internal conflicts should there be another pandemic or global war. This guy's got his finger on the pulse. I mean, I suppose all they'd have to do now is say there's another pandemic or a climate change emergency, and then we wouldn't have enough food, and then they'd be able to control us and lock us in our homes and tell us that we had to take this medicine and that anyone who questioned it was like a fascist or far right. That's enough now, Caleb. Get out there and plant some fucking rhubarb, you little fascist. What happens? England at war with itself, he said. What an extraordinary image. This guy, Caleb's some kind of savant, isn't he? The government said it was committed to British farmers producing at least 60% of the food eaten in the country. Get out of our lives, you lot. Get out of our lives, you corrupt psychopaths. When it comes to fresh produce, the UK imports almost half of its vegetables and around 80% of its fruit each year. We should all be organising our diet around what's available, what can be grown. We should be supporting our farmers. We should have interconnected communities. We should have absolute, representative, localised democracies. Wherever possible, we should be freeing ourselves from the influence of these globalist psychopaths, these farmland acquiring lunatics that hate you, that want you starved and desperate and lost and alone. Whatever it takes to forge new pathways of freedom, we should be willing to undertake together. Look at this, another bizarre story. English farmers are being offered exit payments of up to £100,000 so that they would retire, allowing, oh, centralisation of farming. The government will buy the land. English farmers wishing to retire from the agricultural industry are being offered exit payments of £100,000 under a DEFRA scheme. I guess that's some centralised organisation. The lump sum exit scheme is designed to help farmers. We gotta help you farmers who wish to retire or leave the industry, but found it difficult to do so for financial reasons. I know similar plans are underfoot across the Netherlands, the second largest creator or grower of food in the world, second largest exporter of food after your country, the United States of America. What's happening to farmers in your country? What's happening to farmers in my country? What's happening to farmers around the world? And do you think there's something extraordinary going on when our food sources are being controlled, while we're being propagandized and told that eating this food is racist and eating that food is crazy and even looking at that food is far right? Do you think there's something extraordinary is happening when it seems that farmers are being systematically impoverished and put out of business, that their land is being forcibly purchased by the government in the Netherlands and in Germany, when Bill Gates is acquiring farmland in a rate of extraordinary acreage. Something unusual is going on. I don't understand all of it, but what I do know is that it's not being done to help you. It's not being done to feed you. One of the things that happened in the pandemic period is we awoke from the illusion of their care and their concern. We saw how their treaties operate. We saw how their relationships with Big Pharma and the media interconnect to generate conditions of compliance, ignorance, sending us all either asleep or leaving us supine and vulnerable. They don't want you strong. They don't want you awake. They don't want you activated, intercommunicated, growing your own food, communicating freely with farmers, believing in a vision. No, they want you to believe that Biden's your pappy, Kamala's your mama, that Trump is the devil and that you should shut your mouth and that there is no alternative out there. Well, we're here to tell you that there is an alternative, that you are that alternative and that you are participating in the revolution just through your disobedience, just through your refusal to consume their lies and to consume their bugs. But that's just what I think. Why don't you let me know what you think in the comments and the chat? That's all we got time for today, you glorious individuals. Thank you for joining us on Rumble. Thank you for joining us, you Awakened Wonders. Awakened Wonders community, we've got all sorts of fantastic events coming up. Have a look at the menu. All of these things are happening. I want to thank those of you that have joined us. Here are some of our new members. Thank you for being with us. Tomorrow, we got a glorious show coming up. Do you want to join us? Do you want to become an Awakened Wonder? Use the code I Surrender. You get a month free. You can leave any time, baby. We love you. We love you and we want you and we respect your freedom, you beautiful people. Okay, we'll be back tomorrow at the same time, not for more of the same. Oh no, we'd never offend you with that, but with more of the different. Until then, if you can, stay free.